Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Are there no fair questions about the distribution of wealth?
I think it's fine to talk about those things in quiet rooms and discussions about tax policy and the like. But the president has made this part of his campaign rally. Everywhere we go, or he goes, we hear him talking about millionaires and billionaires and executives and Wall Street. And it's a very envy-oriented, attack-oriented approach, and I think it'll fail.
There's that clip again. Mitt Romney on the Today Show with Matt Lauer last week, saying conversations about wealth disparity in this country should take place among policymakers in, quote, quiet rooms. But a few new polls caught our eye, showing that more and more Americans openly are uneasy about the divide between rich and poor in this country. And they continue to feel as if Congress is not doing enough on their behalf to address it. This Pew study that came out the other day, did you hear about this yet? Showing that two-thirds of the public, 66%, believe there are very strong or strong conflicts between the rich and the poor, an increase of 19 percentage points seeing conflict since 2009. That's a huge increase in any poll result. 73% of Democrats see a strong conflict between rich and poor, but also 55% of Republicans. That leaves Romney in debates like last night's in South Carolina, defending his place in economic society.
Four of the companies that we invested in, they weren't businesses I ran, but we invested in, ended up today having some 120,000 jobs. Some of the businesses we invested in weren't successful and lost jobs. And I'm very proud of the fact that we learned from the experience. We invested in well over 100 different businesses.
Romney in the Fox News Wall Street Journal poll last night. And let's talk to Paul Taylor, Executive Vice President of the Pew Center, about his poll and about American concerns over class and wealth. Hi, Paul. Welcome back to WNYC.
Nice to be with you. Good morning.
So the headline, as I read it, is rising share of Americans see conflict between rich and poor. Why did you use that word conflict? Why did you ask the question that way rather than just divide or disparity between rich and poor?
Well, as is often the case with interesting questions, we repeat questions that have been asked for years, or in this case, decades, because we look at trends and you're informed by how public attitudes change over time. This is a question that was first asked back in the late 1980s, so it's got about a 25-year trend. It was asked by the General Social Survey, which is a broad look at core American values. And the question sort of interesting. It basically sets up, look, in any society, there are conflicts between different groups. Please tell us whether you think there are strong, very strong, not so strong, or no conflicts at all between the following groups. And the four groups we put in this survey, which we took just a few weeks ago, were rich versus poor, immigrants versus native-born, blacks versus whites, and young versus old. And as you point out, and we got the highest registration of people saying they perceive there are conflicts, strong conflicts or very strong between rich and poor. Two-thirds, as you say, said that. That sort of leaped to the head of the pack. We had asked the identical question 2 years ago, and the largest share thought that there were the greatest number of conflicts between immigrants and native-born. So there has been a dramatic rise, 19 percentage points, in the share of Americans who perceive conflicts by class. And my guess is, we took this poll just before the Christmas holidays, a lot of news coverage around the country throughout the fall and winter of 2011 was about the Occupy Wall Street movement, which famously had this slogan, it's the one versus the 99. So in some ways, they didn't set up the conflict between the rich and the poor. They basically set up the conflict between the rich and everybody else. It drew a lot of attention. A protest movement is by its nature conflictual. It also drew a lot of coverage of the issue of income inequality, which has been a part of our economic scene for decades now. It drew a lot of attention on the front pages of newspapers. So my guess is what you saw was a reaction to the news coverage and the debate that was framed by this protest movement. That if nothing else, a lot of critics of the movement said, well, they don't have an agenda. Where do they want to go? A lot of the public didn't like the tactics, but we know from other surveys that they're very sympathetic to the message.
Paul Taylor from the Pew Center on the poll results that they released about conflict between rich and poor, rich and others in this country. What's the conflict? Can your poll results get at that at all? Is it about one being exploited by the other? I noticed in the debate last night, and I don't have this clip, but Gingrich was talking about Obama as a food stamps president. And yeah. That's got racial coding. It's also intended to stoke middle class resentment against the poor rather than against the wealthy like him. So what's the conflict when people say there's more conflict? Is it that they feel exploited by companies like Bain, exploited by the banks, exploited by the poor who are on food stamps or getting foreclosure relief? Can you put your finger on it from the poll?
We can put our finger, we can add some, I hope, nuance and context, not from that specific question, but from other questions we asked on that survey and other surveys we have taken recently. First of all, in that survey, we asked people, how did the rich get rich? Did they? Is it mostly because they were born into it, or it's mostly because of their hard work and ambition? The public today, as it has been for many years, is sort of equally divided on that question. There hasn't been much change in attitudes on that question. In this poll, 46% say they were born into it, and 43% say, no, it was their own hard work and ambition. We also, on other polls, asked two questions that I think get at this. Where is the conflict, or where is the source of tension? One of them is there too much or not enough power these days in the hands of the wealthy, the banks, and the large corporations? Overwhelmingly, three-quarters of Americans say yes. We then also asked a question about the U.S. tax system, and we said to people, is the tax system in our country fair? A majority of the public says no. We then asked a follow-up question, well, why do you think it isn't fair? Is it because you yourself are paying too much in taxes? Only 11% say that's the problem, I'm paying too much. Is it because the wealthy are paying too little in taxes? And 57% say, yes, that's the problem. So I think there is some sense of unfairness in the tax system. I don't see much evidence that the public wants to keep the rich from being able to benefit from the free enterprise system. You know, there's an old saying in polling and in politics: Americans don't hate the rich; Americans want to be rich. And I think when Governor Romney and other Republicans say, you be very careful about going after the free enterprise system, that's the goose that lays the golden egg. At some level, a lot of the public sort of gets that. And they are more interested in economic policies, we know this from other polls, that will sort of expand the overall pie rather than necessarily force people into a more equal situation. So there are different strains of public opinion, and I think you see some cross pressures and conflict here. But I think overall that there is a growing perception of income inequality, and there are growing concerns about fairness in the American public.
Listeners, how much conflict do you see among different income groups in America, and how would you characterize the conflict? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or go to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show to answer that question or react to anything that we're talking about here. Paul Taylor, Executive Vice President of the Pew Center, and me, 212-433-9692. Cassius in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Thanks for calling again, Cassius. Hello.
Hello, Brian. Thanks. You're usually so balanced and intelligent and fair with your comments, but it's so outrageous to me that you're saying that Newt Gingrich's phrase, the food stamp president, that it's racially coded, and then you also said that it's like designed to inflame anger against the poor. It's the complete opposite of that. He's just saying that because Obama has done so little to be able to create jobs in the nation, that so many of us now have to be on food stamps. And I can't stand hearing this racial coding idea. And there's nothing subtextual about it. I have to live on food stamps now, like so many other people do in this nation who never had to before. And that's really all there is to it. He wants to see us be able to get off them by being able to work more.
It's, you know, it's a fair reaction. I think, you know, as I hear it and having watched Newt Gingrich and listened to his words closely over the years, I think as a matter of political interpretation, and it's my political interpretation, that he's using it in both respects with exactly what you said. You said nothing subtextual. I think it's all about subtext or partly about subtext. So on the one hand, he's saying precisely what you just said, which is Obama's not presiding over a growth economy. He's more interested in a food stamp economy that is helping people get government benefits because the economy isn't growing under him. On the other hand, knowing Gingrich's long history of things like this and seeing the way that it came right after Rick Santorum's answer, I don't know if you were watching last night, but
no,
Santorum was kind of going after Romney and Bain and a certain kind of out-of-touchness about some wealthy people. And then Gingrich went next, and he turned it right around, and he talked about Obama and the food stamp economy. And, you know, this was discussed on Morning Edition, too. It's my opinion. It's my interpretation. And, you know, you're certainly entitled to disagree with it and call it unfair. But
yeah,
that's where I saw it anyway.
I just think people can the whole idea of racial coding, it can just get so out of hand because people can start using that whenever they want in reference to anything. Like, we can start saying subtextual this, subtextual that, you know, in relation to anything. And there's not much rigor in the, it leads to not much rigor in the analysis.
And I agree that it can be used that way. You know, Gingrich is the same guy who was out last year saying Obama subscribes to Kenyan anti-colonialism, which is why he hates America. So, you know, I mean, I'm just saying there's a context there.
But, yeah. That's certainly not as clear and fair as
but Cassius, keep calling and keep critiquing things that I say if you want to, okay? Thank you.
All right. Thank
keep
you,
calling
Brian.
Us. Thank you very much. John in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, John.
Yeah, hi. How you doing, Brian?
Thanks for calling.
The guest made mention of before of the that you know the country people in the country believe whether or not they believe that the wealth the you know the 1% is earned they earn that money or they you know they're born into it, and I was just wondering if there's any data to reflect the actual reality of that situation, because I believe that a lot of people think that you know that all these people are out there you know pulling up their bootstraps and becoming instant millionaires when in fact I would imagine that a large percentage of the quote-unquote 1% is, you know, a inherited class. Could you just maybe speak to that?
Well, there is data on generational mobility, where you look at a society and you figure out where did a child start out, you know, and that's defined by his or her parents, where they were on the income distribution. Was the child grow up in the lowest quintile, the middle quintile, the upper quintile, et cetera, et cetera, and then trace the life course, economic life course of that child, and see where does he or she wind up as an adult. And one of the things that's happened in this country over the last few decades is there is less intergenerational mobility of that kind than there used to be. I think in this country, it's part of the great American ideal. Anyone can make it to the top. We're not a class society, you know, and there is great deal of intergenerational mobility. Various studies, including some done by the Pew Charitable Trust, have found that intergenerational mobility has diminished. Now, I don't have precise numbers on the share who currently are in the top 1%, either by wealth or income, how many of them started there. But I think it is correct to say that there is just less movement up and down the ladder than there used to be. So where you start has more to do with where you end up than used to be the case.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much. On that point as well, Phil in Brooklyn. Hi, Phil. You're on WNYC with Paul Taylor from the Pew Center.
Yes, Mr. Taylor, I just wanted to ask you a question about your survey. You should ask also in the survey how many people believe that the ultra-rich have stolen their way into being rich. Because I think that is, in one way or another, it's a big component. Because look at what happened with this whole banking crisis. A lot of it was fraud. And there's a lot of fraud, insurance fraud, every kind of fraud you can think of, white-collar crime, that makes people ultra-rich.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that we try to do or try not to do as survey researchers is frame a question in what's likely to be perceived as an inflammatory way, where you will get people reacting to it, but you really don't know whether you're reacting to the inflammatory language that you put in the question or you're getting a more neutral reading. So I would, just as a matter of good polling practice, you would not say, you know, have they all stolen the money yet, true or false? But as I think I mentioned earlier, we ask a question about whether there's too much power in this country, in the hands of the wealthy and large corporations, and a very heavy percentage say yes. And I suspect some of that does come from the view. I mean, we all know what's happened to the economy over the last 4 or 5 years. We all know how many people are struggling, and we all know the history that part of this was, a financial meltdown and a banking crisis, where some of the behaviors, either by the regulators or the bankers or both, wasn't terribly attractive.
And some of it was
story is well told, and I think it probably feeds into the success, frankly, of the Occupy Wall Street movement,
right,
and the public attitudes about rich and poor.
It would be an interesting thing to measure. I mean, some of the recent guests on this show, backing up what Phil was saying, Matt Taibbi writes about it as kind of mass thievery at the level of the banks. Dylan Radigan from MSNBC has a book like that. He was on the show the other day talking about how there was a lot more fraud than people think or than people have been prosecuted for. So it would be an interesting public opinion question to see at some point. Maybe it's been done. If people think there's fraud, there's theft on the part of people at the tops of the banks that caused the financial crisis, or whether they were just it's a great choice. Were they fraudulent or were they stupid, right, for investing in the housing bubble? This is going to be difficult for Romney going forward. Looking at another poll from YouGov that is just out, questions like percent saying that the candidate cares about people like me, cares about people like me. Obama 51%, Romney 41%. Cares about the poor. Obama 64%, Romney 38%. Cares about the middle class. Obama 56%, Romney 48%. And cares about the wealthy. Obama 55% and Romney 89%. So those are politically challenging for numbers for him if he gets the nomination. And just one other thing before you go, an interesting result that you got by race. African Americans saw more class conflict than whites, no surprise there, but Hispanics saw less?
Yes, that's correct. And the other interesting racial component here is that I described a large increase in the perception of everybody seeing conflict from 2009 to 2011, and it's by far the greatest increase in that perception was among whites. So there is still a racial gap between whites and blacks, but it has closed quite significantly. Among Hispanics, it's interesting. We see this in this survey question. We see it across the board. There is a kind of there's a tendency not to register attitudes of conflictual attitudes among Latinos in response to a lot of questions. So maybe you're picking up a little bit of a cultural difference there, as much as an economic difference.
Our next conversation is going to be whatever happened to the Tea Party, because as the Occupy movement continues to be out in the streets, Tea Partiers are not. And as kind of a transition to that, let's take Terry's call from Staten Island. Terry, who identifies as a Tea Party supporter, I think. Right, Terry?
Good morning, Brian. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
No, I didn't. In fact, just the opposite. I have a strong support of Occupy. And I feel that the country as a whole, we really need
to... Whoops. Go ahead, Terry. Sorry. Wait. We're having some phone trouble. Terry, where are you? Well, we lost Terry. Well, then I'll ask you the Tea Party question. Paul, were you able to measure class conflict along that particular ideological line, whether people were identifying with the Tea Party and if they saw class conflict?
We did not in this particular survey do the cut that way, so I can't respond to that. We have asked a lot of questions over the last few years about the Tea Party, attitudes towards the Tea Party. We have reported from our surveys, as others had, that support for the Tea Party has declined. It crested in 2010 and continued for a while, but it's now a year and a half later, and the mood is somewhat different. Even within one of the reports we did a month or two ago was even in those congressional districts that sent Tea Party candidates to Congress in 2010 as part of that big Republican sweep, support for the Tea Party had receded a bit. So this may be a case where you had a protest movement. I mean, the comparisons with the Occupy are really very interesting. The Tea Party captured a lot of the populist resentment and anger that's abroad in the land, in a time of a very bad economy. They capitalized on it politically in 2010, whereas Occupy doesn't seem to have, a way to get to a specific political agenda and doesn't seem to be about electing people. But it is possible that the very success of the Tea Party, has engendered a counterreaction, as people are very, very down on Congress. We have a new poll out today. ABC put out a new poll, record low approval ratings and a feeling that this Congress isn't doing the people's business, there's just an overwhelming reaction there. So these things go back and forth. The tide comes in, the tide goes out.
Paul Taylor, Executive Vice President of the Pew Center, keeping track of the tides in public opinion. Thank you very much.
Nice to be with you.
And we will take calls next from those of you who do now or who have ever identified as Tea Party supporters. If you were, when you called us in 2009, 2010, have you evolved out of that or are you still? And if so, why aren't you visible in the streets as a group, as the Occupy movement is today? 212-433-WNYC. Oh, and by the way, are you supporting Ron Paul for president? Some people say, hey, if you're really a Tea Party, you should be supporting Ron Paul for president. But the polls show that Romney gets as much. 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. Current or former Tea Party supporters, as we will bring in Sam Tannenhouse, the editor of the New York Times Book Review, who wrote a piece in the Sunday Review on Sunday called History versus the Tea Party. Current or former Tea Party supporters, 212-433-WNYC, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show.